Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Daly.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. So do please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter and join the club and get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you.
You're back with the big interview with Nader Manua. It's part two. During this, we finally get to talking about punditry, analysis, football broadcasting, a trade that we now share since Chineda moved from the pitch to the studio. I think he's doing well. I think he brings a different perspective. I like the fact that he's argumentative about the points of view that other pundits put across. And when the presenter hands to him a patsy question, it's often the case that Anua will stop and break it down and really get to grips with the idea that's been put forward. I like that. I wish there was much more of that. Chineda Anua, for my taste, makes me think, makes me stop and listen when he's talking on television or radio, and that's to be welcomed. This is a reflective and intelligent man when it comes to breaking down what he tries to do. And some of the ways in which we both agree, football fans get shortchanged by some of his fellow pros who turn up and just let their belly rumble. Chineda has just published his autobiography. It's called Kicking Back. We analyse why it's called Kicking Back and why that theme is held across to his excellent interview podcast. If you haven't heard it, then try and find it. It's worth it. Chineda's autobiography is out right now. I read it in preparation for this interview, and I can wholeheartedly recommend it to you, dear listener, to buy and to read or to gift. You're with Chineda Manua on The Big Interview, part two. Enjoy and listen. Do me a little summer favour. If you've tuned in this season and you've enjoyed it, if you found anecdotes interesting, if you found guests interesting, tell people, please. Spread the word. Share with friends. Share with family. Stop people in the street and share with them, because you know deep down in your soul, it'll make you feel good. Which makes me think of Ray Parker Jr. and Ghostbusters. But that's the way my silly mind works. Thank you all for being with The Big Interview. This is Chineda Manua.
When I was playing, a big frustration I had was that some of the people who would be leading pundits, it's almost like they forgot what it was like to be a player. And that's what troubles me the most, because I understand there's a show, there's a performance that they're giving and they're trying to make the game better. But have a sense of perspective. Like, if a team isn't going to press, but they need to win a game, the person that's in the commentary box shouldn't be saying it's a disgrace that they're not pressing, because that's them projecting their own perception of the game.
Yeah.
But those players who are on the field are doing the job that they've been asked to do by the manager.
Tactically, strategically.
Yeah. And every coach, like, that's a good coach, will get his team to play how they want them to play. But sometimes the tactics don't work.
But there are a lot of people there are a lot of people in the category you're describing who are ex-footballers of one degree or another.
Yeah.
Who don't have a clue.
Oh.
And they're there because they're a name.
Yeah.
Or the television radio channel know their agent. Or this will help our profile. And they're sitting there. And I'm not being critical of them. I'm being critical of the people who hire them.
but they don't understand, and they therefore it's difficult to explain properly the strategy if you don't understand it.
Yeah, it's true, but having been in some of these conversations, now not everyone will agree with me here. If that player is in that show, he's the most experienced person, he's the most qualified person to talk about football, so everything that he will say will be perceived as correct until somebody tries to put him right, who's also done something similar. But they tend not to get people like that. You've got specialists on one thing or the other. And even, so 2012, we stayed up with QPR on the last day, finished 17th. And I remember after the game, in our dressing room, we were having beers, we were relieved, we were celebrating, the City's won, it was champagne. Up until that point, I always used to get frustrated as to why I see people celebrate staying up on the last day and finishing 17th. Mm-hmm. Because I was being fed the stuff that you shouldn't be allowed to celebrate at that. And then I was in it. And I realised it's not about finishing 17th. It's about staying in the league.
Mm-hmm.
For some of those players, that's the highest they ever finished in the football pyramid. You stay in the league and 20 people keep their jobs. You stay in the league and everybody gets to keep their salaries. You stay in the league and you can plan for the next year. You don't have to move house. You don't have to downgrade this. You don't have to take your kids out of school. But those points were never being made because a lot of the people who give their opinions have only ever finished first, second or third. And a bad spell for them is not winning 4 games in a month. But they have the platform, they have the microphone, and they're going to lean into that bias that they have. And it frustrates me because they don't have that sense of perspective, but they do have the platform and nobody to push back. So what you hear is what you expect everything to be.
It's really nicely, articulately put, and you know, it's a better way to frame the frustration I feel when... I do think we live in an era where most people, if they bother, if they love the sport, most people have changed their perception, their analysis, their vocabulary, their terms of reference. Still, people will have a phrase or a word or a concept and misapply it. I'm talking about the educated public.
Yeah.
But having lived through such a long time listening to guff and knowing that the person saying it probably is out with their parameters or their comfort zone, but they're earning a buck, they like being in the public eye again. I always blame the broadcasters for not having more intelligence about what do we want here? Do we want to add to the product, make it more interesting, make it more articulate, make people understand more? Mostly the answer is that people haven't thought like that at all. But gradually we are.
Yeah, and just to make one more point on that, I think everybody has some sort of bias to some extent, whether it's a particular team or a player and stuff that you do like. But I feel like the role which I'm in and other people are in, just watch a game. And then talk about the game for what it is, not what you wanted to see or what you hope to see.
I accept that. I hear,
you know what I mean?
Bad moments in my season when I'm tired and I'm like, you can let out a bit of frustration about this is what should have been happening, this is what I expected to see. You have to be careful.
Even like with City going out of the Champions League, that's the running narrative about City and Pep failing and the like.
Mm.
But I was fielding questions about, did he get the substitutions wrong? And then, you know, I support City, but I looked at the game and I thought, Kevin De Bruyne wasn't playing well.
Mm-hmm.
This other player wasn't playing well. I think if you're on the sideline and players aren't playing well, you're not going to keep them on.
He's not sacrosanct.
Exactly.
He's made that De Bruyne substitution a few times this season, saying about 70 in terms of delivery.
He's had chance.
You're at peak delivery.
He's had chance to be able to be better in the game, but it didn't happen. So they want to be critical of the substitutions. But then for the City goal, Zinchenko plays a good ball to Gundogan. Gundogan plays a ball to Bernardo Silva. Then there's a goal scored. And then in real time, as you know yourself from being into La Liga, Kroos, Modric, Casemiro are off the field for Real Madrid.
Yeah.
From an English audience who don't really watch a lot of La Liga, that's mind-blowing to them because the players they know for Real Madrid are Kroos, Modric, Casemiro and Benzema.
Yeah.
So if all those four players come off, like imagine, and like they were doing whatever they were doing, like why are we talking about City subs but not mentioning the fact that Real Madrid's complete dynamic change by taking off three of them or four of the most significant players in the history?
Two things that occurred to me was like when you were talking about Silva, you were talking about the first leg.
Yeah.
And when Kroos takes Sinchenko in half, I'm sure it's Sinchenko, and the referee doesn't blow.
Mm.
And three Madrid players stop.
Yeah.
Which is Kroos. And it actually turns out I've committed a foul. Courtois goes, okay, get ready for the...
Yeah.
Militao and Carvalho freeze and City are still on the go. They're on the go and suddenly Silva's scored and absolutely super alert. That's nothing to do
I don't think, with age. That's to do with cultural conditioning, which in Spain, if you make a tackle like that, there's no advantage. It's automatically a foul. And City's boys are on it. Like,
yeah.
And in the second game where you talked about subs, if you look, Camavinga is 19, only just 19, and he's inexperienced. His trajectory during the season, but his run to receive the ball from, he goes cross field without City's players realising it, so that Courtois can lay it out, and then he takes it and turns and makes a real right passage run down there, and suddenly City are in strategic tatters, and it's just, it wasn't a substitution.
Yeah,
it's like, how do you cope with stress?
Yeah.
How do you cope with it having taken a blow to the chin? How do you react?
Like, being somebody who supports City, because they lost, like, there's no argument you can put forward which doesn't appear, like, you're just on the back foot straight away, because all the people who don't
like here,
them.
Analytically, it's valid. Analytically,
I'm trying to say what I saw, but it sounds like I'm an apologist, but I'm just trying to say what I saw, because that's what I say every time I watch a game. Like, I'm watching both teams, and I'm seeing the flow of the game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, say, from here, they lose the game, and for some, now it's the time for the City inquest, because they're not going to talk about the fact that Camavinga for Kroos or whatever it was, that ended up being a great substitution.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, most people over here who watch Real Madrid, who don't watch Real Madrid, would never have said that's a great substitution.
No.
But it ends up being a great substitution. So if you can apply that logic to that, then the City sub didn't make things worse for City. Things weren't going great for them.
But you've talked about chosen narratives, and this is the one that, because neither am I being defensible about Pep, but he has said throughout his career, and more especially here as the inquest comes every year.
Yeah.
You said football and Champions League, in particular Champions League, is about minimal details.
Yes,
a little sliver
exactly.
of luck for us against the... And he talked about the Crouch handball and the Tottenham one where, you know, they missed the penalty in the first leg.
Yeah.
Your old pal that we're coming to in a minute.
Yeah.
I think it's Kuhn who misses the penalty, I think.
Down at
Spurs, I'm pretty sure it is. Crouch, there is a handball. The rule gets changed after that.
Yeah.
You know, they say, well, it can't be... Blah, blah, blah. When they go through against Paris Saint-Germain, when they get to the final against Chelsea, there's a free kick that gets taken that bounces off the Paris Saint-Germain wall and goes, I think it's De Bruyne's kick, and there's a difference. It goes for, it goes against.
Yeah.
And however you want to classify the strategies or the energy levels or the substitutions, the fact that Mondi gets back and Phil Foden doesn't take a half step forward so that he's in the way of the ball before Mondi gets it, or doesn't take a half step forward so that Mondi's clear doesn't bounce off. Courtois stud. The second Grealish one comes off Courtois stud.
Yeah.
How is that going to be Pep's fault?
It's margins. Like, football is margins. I've lived it. It's margins. And some of these games and the way that we talk about the things, especially in the Champions League, like, it's got such a bias towards, say, potential dislike for a particular team and the like, that you disregard the opposition. You're in the Champions League knockout stages. Teams didn't win a raffle to end up in this position. So they might not be as good as Team X.
Or as known.
As known as Team X, but they're capable of winning games, which is exactly why they're there. So there is disappointment because the team always enters as a favourite, but the favourite doesn't always win, which is why we watch football. Or am I like? But this just feels really obvious to me. But then still there's tons of people like, oh, you would say that because you're a City guy. It's the same as like the cash argument.
Keep saying
it's
it.
Like, oh, you would, yeah, I would do that because I was getting paid so much. It's like, ugh.
Our sponsors are Bet365. And our sponsors do, you know, get awfully excited about the 10-year anniversary. And their question, how did you feel being at the Etihad as an opposition player when City won the first Premier League? I think anybody who knows you knows how you felt. QPR, Super Hoops, let's stay up. One of the things I know about that day is that you were really pissed off with yourself.
Mm.
And it links back to your ball boy days.
Mm.
Because late in the game, with the need for, I think, Bolton to do well in their other games at Bolton.
No, we needed Stoke to beat Bolton.
Stoke to beat Bolton. Stoke were losing for a chunk of the game.
Yeah.
Last you know they're losing.
Yeah.
I'm going to choose not to talk about Joy Barton now, although in kicking back, I was reading the chapter about the game, and I thought, Joy Barton? Ah, there's a chapter coming.
Yeah,
it's
pretty
pungent.
It's always coming,
you know, it's a tough read.
But it's the thing with Joey Barton, like, I played many years with him. Like, some of the stuff he did on the field, I appreciate because he was a good player. But there was tons of stuff off the field which just didn't sit with me at all.
And it's an enigma that he's gone on to, at the moment at least, be a successful coach. His team, it's just before we spoke, won 7-0 to go
exactly. off. Exactly. That's probably the highlight of his managerial career. And that's an incredible achievement. But the reality of the situation is I think he needed to change based on what he was, because he had an idea of what was right as a player, and he'd stick with it 100%. and disregard the other players that were around him. And now as a manager, he needs to get everybody to buy into
it. It's a good change. So the thing that I wanted to know about the day that I don't know how many times you've been asked about is, like, describe the process of the throw-in.
Okay.
And why you were pissed off and what you would do now. And why football tells you, because you were angry about being naive, I'll let you describe it. We all know that that was City and you stayed up and beer and champagne. I don't think there's an awful lot discussed about the actual goal.
Yeah.
And the movement and the finish.
Yeah.
Because we now all got a celebration and there's Mancini and Martin Tyler's commentary and that. But the actual, the goal itself is pretty phenomenal in my book.
The goal itself is Sergio, right? As you know.
The throw-in.
Okay, so... Interestingly, I learned something new this week about said throwing. Okay, so I'm playing right back in this game, as we all know, in the 94th minute, basically. And because that was my first time back there, I'd never experienced being in that stadium and people not rooting for me.
Mm.
And to be in a game and to be getting jeered, all that stuff was really weird. Like, I never forget, at halftime, the City fans were singing for Martin Petrov because he was playing at Bolton at the time. Bolton were winning, so us as QPR, we were going down. So I almost took that personally, hearing City fans sing for somebody else. But for that throw-in, it's 2-2. I just essentially lost Dzeko for the header to make it 2-2, by the way.
You're already pissed off.
I'm worried now. Because as a player, you know when something's your fault, and I knew that goal was my fault.
He's putting a big jump.
Yeah, he's putting a big jump. And he was fresher as well, because he didn't start the game.
Substitutions, you see. But so what should you have done? If you're not jumping, lean, and just nudge?
I maybe could have tried to nudge him more, or just not felt cramping both cars and figured it out. You know, it's the little things. But it's interesting. I was at the club from 10 through to 25, and there's one picture of me in the whole arena, and it's when Dzeko's scoring a header against me.
Thanks, lads.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. But anyway, it's 2-2. Sean Wright Phillips just taking the ball down the right wing for QPR. I just want to throw in, and I'm like walking over, but because I'm an ex-City player and because I'm a City fan, and I'm trying to be respectful, so I enter a little canter to go and get the ball, because if you're playing against anybody else now, nobody takes that throw in. The ball's just out of play till the end of time. Like, that's just what it is. But I'm like, I've got to be respectful, so I canter over. But what I learned this week, somebody asked me, when did you know the QPR was safe? And I say, well, it was after City scored. They show me a video from the opposite stand, and as I've got the ball in my hands, the QPR bench starts celebrating 5 yards to the side of me. And I didn't notice this, because if I did, I would have started celebrating with them.
Yeah.
And the throw-in might never have come in.
Yeah, been taken, yeah.
And I thought, why do people always say, like, it's corrupt and we knew and we gave up? But like I say, I've got the ball in my hand and I'm just about to throw it down the line, and they're all going bonkers. But anyway, I had to throw it.
Even subliminally, you've no idea.
No idea. Like, it seems ridiculous because they're 5 yards away. If somebody came from that bench and ran over to me and said we were up,
you'd have clocked.
I'd have clocked it straight away.
Yeah, yeah.
But none of that happened. So I took the throw and I asked Jay Boffers to go down the line, and I missed him. So they had the ball. And now I'm sprinting back. I've seen the video. I'm panicking. I'm sprinting back. Because again, you know when something's going to be your fault if it goes wrong. And at this point, you know, it's 2-2. We're staying up. It's the last minute of the game. Well, to be fair, you say it's last minute. The downside of stoppage time is you never know how long's gone. As a player, like, I hated that feeling. Always having to ask the referee, please, ref, how long left now? So they're coming forward and I'm running back. And at no point can I get involved in trying to stop the attack. But I think Nigel De Jong plays a ball. Then it goes from Sergio to Mario. Mario gets a touch. Sergio takes that little touch to separate himself. And lo and behold, Sergio smashes it into the corner. But here's the little bit for you. I'm not sure if this is in the book. I thought this was my fault. We're relegated. There was this loud noise of everybody celebrating. I'm distraught. And a second later, I see that QPR bench is celebrating. Our fans are celebrating. QPR fans are calmer. But all that happened, the game finished, congratulated people, pitch invasion, went to the dressing room, relief, hugs, all that stuff, went home. Then I didn't watch football for like 2 days. Didn't put Sky Sports News on, anything like that. I didn't know who scored that winning goal for Man City. I was 5 yards away from it. I didn't know who did it.
Until you'd eaten an inhuman portion of food in 2 days.
Which, yeah, exactly.
This isn't kicking.
Yeah, I'd literally had two days worth of binging, yeah. But I literally didn't know. And it seems insane, because everyone's like, oh, how do you remember the Aguero thing? I'm like, well, firstly, I was on the field, so Martin Tyler wasn't in my earshot, Aguero. But then also, like, the shock and the sickness I felt, because I thought I'd relegated my team at my old stadium.
Yeah.
None the wiser as to what just happened.
I'm going to, like, I think I'm just out of distance of a right hook. I'm going to blame...
That's what it feels like. That's probably what it feels like when somebody gets knocked out in a boxing fight and then they wake up and they have to do an interview afterwards. I was like, oh, yeah, it was...
Brent's tweeting around that. Yeah. I didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
I'm going to blame Dr. and Mr. Onua for the throw-in.
In what sense? Because I was trying to be respectful. Do you know, you're probably right. You're probably right. There are tons of people... people seen the book as well who I like really dislike, but I never made anything hard for any of those people because I was trying to be respectful. I was trying to take the high road and all that stuff, and in every moment I was trying to be respected because who I am means everything to me. So to be perceived in any other sort of way is frustrating, even if it comes at my own cost. I think people will sense that through the book.
And in this chat we haven't made a big deal of it, but I'm hoping that either through listening to the podcast or reading Kicking Back, they're going to get a picture of what I'm talking about, because I've read, I didn't know before I read your book.
Yeah.
But there were strong disciplinarian rules,
there were
strong consequence and action
relations.
For my taste, to multiply your family by a million and Britain's a better place.
Yeah,
there are fewer idiots who make better decisions. Please God, if he's guiding you now, let there be many more like them, but... They didn't do you a favour with the throwing.
No, they didn't. No, I'm obviously biased, and my family setup was very good. But yeah, I literally could have just been the biggest egg on planet Earth and just refused to go over. But I just didn't. I just didn't do it. I just couldn't do it. And in fairness, because of the way it finished, the only people who were angry at me for doing it would be United fans.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else cares.
Well, if you see the celebration and you go over to join them, the throw-in doesn't get taken. United are champions, so...
Exactly, yeah. So in hindsight...
You get what you earn.
Yeah,
it was exactly. City's day.
Before the rest of this big interview, I'd like to tell you that our entire archive of audio and video content is now on our new YouTube channel. We've begun filming all of our interviews, and there are already loads of clips with guests, including Rio Ferdinand, Connor Cody, Brendan Rodgers and Jamie Carragher, plus full interviews for you to watch and to share. Please do share with friends. Go to YouTube and search Graham Hunter, or click on the link in the show notes to this episode and become a subscriber. I honestly think you'll enjoy it. Thanks.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We got socios who've supported us all our existence, and they're people who are like their members, like season ticket holders. Daniel Dowie is one. Afternoon, Graham and Needham. He's been a breath of fresh air as a pundit on TV, just like you guys on La Liga television. He seems to do a fair bit of research, I think a lot of research, which is very appreciated as a viewer. Not sure what my question can be, so let's go with. I once saw him speaking at Madrid on Sky Sports News at the start of the season. The research was brilliant. What is his research plan when speaking about a team that isn't from these isles? And Merrin Myrtle is much shorter. Merrin Myrtle says, I feel exactly the same way. No question, just huge appreciation. Please pass that on to Needham from us. Yeah. Daniel's point is, how do you approach your research? Why was it brilliant in the case that he's talking about?
So with these shows, like I never knew myself how a show was structured. Obviously for yourself, you've been doing it for a very long time. But to see that it's like a big production, there's a rehearsal, there's a plan. It's almost like a West End show as such. And you kind of... You don't necessarily have lines, but you shouldn't be caught out in terms of not knowing what to talk about. I've discovered not every pundit is the same, but I don't like... If I don't know something, I'll say I don't know, mm-hmm. but I can't be on TV and say I don't know. I can't be on radio and say I don't know over certain topics. Like if somebody's...
You can't do it repeatedly.
If this show is about Real Madrid, I can't arrive and say I know nothing about Real Madrid.
Okay, you're in a minority in that case.
I can say words like... Yeah, you know, as a football team, you know, you want to start on the front foot, Madrid's history, blah, blah. You can do that and get away with
it. It gets a lot of people away with it.
Exactly,
careers.
Yeah. But I'm there to provide insight. Good. So I will do my research. I will watch the games. I'll try and figure out who the players are and come from it from a perspective where it's not just about an individual. You know, we're not just going to talk about Benzema scoring all those goals. Like, what makes Real Madrid the way that they are?
Yeah.
As you watch the matches, he does a nice bit of link up here. How did he rotate? What did he do at the back? Like, what's the significance of Courtois? And I think some of that comes from feeling that myself and probably 80% of footballers are sort of spoken about a lot less than they should be, because there's a, like, people can't be successful without the team.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, you only really hear conversations about stars.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to know the team, you've got to pay attention.
Mm.
So when you pay attention, that's you doing your research instead of just seeing, like, let's see the highlights. Ooh, Salah's done it again. Like, the concept, to go back again to a time, like, I didn't believe, like, football ratings and stuff frustrate me a bit. Because for some of the people who deliver the ratings, if they like somebody, they start at a 7 sure. when the ball's kicked off.
Sure.
And if they play well, they become an 8. If they play bad, they become a 6.
Mm.
People they don't know about start at a 5. And if they score a goal from the halfway line, they hit a 6. You know. But I think I always thought that was unfair.
Do you know you're the only player that ever cared about player ratings?
But only at
not.
The start. Yeah.
There is no subject of any description.
That was only at the start.
There's my witness.
That
any journalist has ever had more shit from footballers about...
But it's
what do you mean a 4?
But it's right now. That's one of the points where the disconnect between being up in the stands and being up in the field really separates.
Yeah.
Because as a player, you know what you're supposed to do and you know what represents a good game for you and the team. Things have changed more now because players can have a platform. But journalists, media people, pundits, broadcasters, they have a platform and they can have a talking point. Like, so many people across the years now hate Paul Pogba. And you wonder, why do they hate Paul Pogba? Is it because they've watched him for the last 2-3 years and hate how he plays? Or if they listen to people talk about how they don't like how he plays, and as a consequence, they roll into the next game saying that.
Probably the latter, isn't it?
Exactly. But the people who are saying that also don't like Paul Pogba. So if he does something good, it won't get mentioned. If he does something bad, it always will.
Kicking back and kick back the Needham, why those titles for the podcast and the book? Is it a play on words? Because you can kick back and relax.
You can leave a bit on someone as well, yeah. Kickback, in fact, it's probably got 3 meanings. So if you're younger, kickback's just like it's like a place you go to after a party. It's almost like a house gathering or whatever. And that's my sort of speed. Then it's kickback and just, you know, relax with something. And then for kicking back, again, you can have it as the relaxing and listening and reading. Or it's the fact that I'm actually pushing back now and finally being able to deliver the stories and opinions that I've had for all these years, because it cuts all these very, very close to my chest. But it's not because nothing's happened. A ton has happened. And now here it is. And I'm kicking back. And now you're going to be able to see it and make up your own decisions about key times. Because being at City through that spell was key. Being who I was in Manchester's key. Being at QPR through those years.
Leader there.
Yeah. And then even, say, being in the USA for those times, like, I said very little because I'm so private, but here it is, and I'm finally doing that. Yeah.
The last thing I want to say then in this, because I think we owe you it, and we haven't asked it. When you read the book, the book's got a lot of detail in it, and clearly anybody who likes this podcast or your podcast likes football.
Yeah.
It happens to be that we three and the majority of people I know that tune into us, we've had 23 million listens so far. They love football. It doesn't just interest them. They love to hear articulate people in their earphones, in their head, just expounding or chewing back and forward. I can be blunt and say, if you read the book, it's like harrowing. But you've met a lot of people who are either not very talented, not very bright. We haven't got time probably because you're dating, but there's a really funny thing where you talk about your ability to read the game early in the book. And then there's the chapter where Ian Holloway is trying to explain.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Shape with the ball, shape without the ball. There's two different sheets.
Yeah, Ian Holloway, looking back, he was brilliant. He's like a really nice guy, effervescent.
Very
you know
funny.
Mean? Really bouncy. And I never forget sitting down and he said, right, we're going to play, just had two different formations up. I was like, is this first half team, second half thing? But that's how quirky it was, and it worked. Really worked. This was like before Pep was in really playing the inverted fullback and stuff. Like, I thought, oh, this is good. But then sometimes it depends on the players, because there was also the thing which he tried to do in pre-season. I think I mentioned in the book where, like, okay, so we always want three people up top to keep four people back. This is what, never four people, never two, always three. And for a month straight, we were watching back at video, and it was always fourth. Oh, there was two. And the analogy he had, he's like, I've got this brand new swimming pool. He's like, really excited. Everything's great. I've got this pool. Really happy about it. I've put the water in. And then I've gone to bed, I've woken up, and it's empty again. And that's what it felt like every day in training.
You, honestly, you read that passage, but you really feel for the poor guy.
He had some really good ideas.
The diagonal ball.
Yeah.
In the knowledge that your winger's too small.
He's front to lose.
Stick a ball.
Yeah, it's diagonal front to lose, and the wingers are like, why am I going for this diagonal ball? What's the point? Just throw yourself into somebody. That is it. But I've been so lucky. I've played under so many managers, so many different characters, and so many like ups and downs and ebb and flow moments, from personal things to like team things. It's brilliant.
But just so I can prove my point to get out here to let you away back today, so many, you know, the bits about Cook, the bits about Marwood, the bits about Pierce, parts of the Harry Redknapp experience, and there are more. Yeah. Joey Bartnett, you've had to put up with some shit in your life.
Yeah, there has been. Yeah.
Overall, if it's been worth it, then potentially being a talented athlete, for example, or, you know, maybe following what your parents had in mind and becoming a lawyer or a teacher or a scientist or whatever, has it been worth it,
yeah,
a life in football? And if so, why?
I would say it has been worth it. Not every part of the journey has been perfect. As you said there, there've been some bad times. But it's kind of aligned me to a point where in the last 2-3 years of my career, I was more outspoken. I would call things out which were wrong, whether it was on the field, off the field. And I stood up for what I really believed in. And I think if I didn't have those experiences when I was younger, maybe I wouldn't have done. But through those experiences, I understand more how football worked, all the sort of the makeup of it, the importance of a kit man, the importance of, say, somebody in the canteen, the importance of everything in terms of being successful, figuring out for the players, because at times I was in a dressing room where I had no voice and nobody was checking on me, when probably a time when I needed them the most. But come the end, I was a leader and I was checking on everybody and they could rely on me. Okay. And with that, they could play better because they knew I had their back. So all those situations which were negative, I think it's made me who I am today, and I think I'm a good person today, and I think my approach to things, I still believe in the benefit of the doubt, but I'm not standing for nonsense. And as a consequence, I think I'm better equipped to be able to talk about that and sort of say, this is right, this is wrong. And if people have got an issue with it, prove me wrong.
If you didn't believe in benefit of the doubt, you probably wouldn't be sitting across the table from an idiot like me.
No. Listen, you're an icon. Listen, I've been watching you for decades.
We need to find better things to do with your life in that case. And that last little bit about being a better person and in terms of choices made laterally in your career, but standing up for people, standing up for what you believe, it makes true the first name that your parents gave you.
Yeah.
So, and Chinatum. What a pleasure.
Thank you very
really
much.
Really well explained.
Absolutely.
Life well spent.
Thank you.
People, it's called Kicking Back, and the podcast is Kick Back with Chinatum Manua. Buy it, listen to it. You'll enjoy it, I promise.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true, Graham Hunter, and Backpage. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Here endeth the lesson.